Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and thank you for listening to the radio voice of Eastern Airlines, the EAL radio show, where we come to you each Monday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Our regular hosts are Steve Thompson, Chuck Albright, Howard Mucci, George Jen, Jim Graybill, Cecile Intriago, Neil Holland, and me. I'm Jim Hart. Our hosts, if you have followed our show, are scattered from South Florida, North Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, New York, and Martha's Vineyard. That's when I'm up on the Martha's Vineyard. How about it, host? Go ahead and check in, please.
Hi, everyone. This is Steve Thompson speaking to you from the cold mountains of North Carolina, where there is a freeze warning tonight, a low of down to about 27 degrees, but the skies are clear, thank goodness, and we'll leave all the snow out in Colorado. Welcome, everybody.
Chuck.
This is Chuck Albright from Central Florida in the Villages. We are the largest retirement community in the world. We're at a balmy 77 degrees tonight, and I think we've leave the hot summer behind us and grab some of that cold air that all these snowbirds are bringing down with us. I just wanted to say hi to the Village Silverliners, if they're listening tonight. I was invited over to their meeting today and introduced our radio show to them and showed them some of the benefits of joining us on the radio and mostly here on the telephone. I told them that was the easiest way. And probably our website, and I went into that how we have things on the website. So, welcome, Silverliners from the Villages of Florida.
Howard Mucci, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Okay, George Jim.
Yeah, hi, it's George from...
Did we get rid of that little duplication?
We got rid of it, Howard.
Yeah, hi, from New York. It's definitely summer's over here, and it's good to be back on the air, and we should have a great show for tonight.
Neil, how about you?
I'm Neil Holland. I'm trying to produce this show. I hope I get it right this time with all the special sound effects. Horse hoofs galloping across the prairie. But at any rate, here in Jacksonville, Florida, where I live, halfway between Jacksonville and St. Augustine. The weather is great. It's just outstanding. It's what I would assume heaven would be like if I ever get there. But the weather is just fantastic. It's cool in the evenings. I think it's going to be down into the 50s.
Neil, we have to correct
Howard?
This duplication.
Are you getting duplication? What are you getting? Okay, I'll correct it. How's that? Okay, just go ahead. Take it from there and tell folks how to
All
get
right.
into our conversation.
All right, fine. And I'm Jim Hart. I'm the guy from Martha's Vineyard, just arrived here in South Florida this last week. I live in Royal Palm Beach, 18 miles inland from West Palm Beach. We had a beautiful 75-degree day, a couple of showers now and again, but otherwise it's nice to be down here where we can go outside and still not have to worry about wearing a big jacket. Folks, if you plan to call in, you need to call us at one of these two numbers, 213-816-1611, or toll-free at 877-572-1861. When you hear the live conversation of our hosts, then be sure to press number 1 on your telephone keypad to connect live with us. Otherwise, you'll be just listening into the show over your telephone. It's easier to just listen by going to our website at www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie, or you can go to the EAL Radio Show's website at www.ealradioshow.com and click on the radio icon shown on the home page. On the home page, you can scroll down and find our Facebook page where you can also click to listen in. When you go to our website, perhaps you will join the nearly 750 Eastern Airlines people and friends that have chosen to do so. There's so much to see on our site. The, the past shows are all listed there, and I think there's one show that you shouldn't miss, and I think it's number 136 while you're on the site. Neil, do we have a sponsor tonight?
I've got a sponsor, yes, but first of all, Jim Graybill, are you with us tonight? Area code 856.
Hi, okay. This is Donna. I'm calling in from area code 856, and I'm just recovering from laryngitis, so I'll just be listening.
Oh, golly, Pete, I hope you join in the conversation tonight, Donna. So nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Folks, perhaps you remember this sponsor. I'm sure you will when you hear the following.
Sunday in Mexico. The sun floods an arena. The historic duel is on. The sun spotlights a diver at Acapulco. Referees a children's game at the pyramids of Teotihuacan. The sun warms a beautiful mermaid in Puerto Rico. And covers the vacation paradise of Miami. More people choose this one to the sun because Eastern service is as warm as the destination.
Great deal. Would you like to introduce our guest tonight?
Yes, I will. I have a special little music I'd like to play. I guess it would be apropos for the authors that write books, which I am very impressed with anyone that can put a book together. I've always wanted to do that. I've been the editor of a magazine, but I just find it fascinating that people can carry an interesting book together for 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 pages, and people read and enjoy the book, and it's an experience. So this little song is for you guys. I think we have two tonight, and our special guest, Patrick Smith. Let's see if you recognize this. Thank you. Of course, the computer doesn't sound like that. That is the typewriter song, and it was conducted by the Boston Pops. Always enjoy that song. It's been around for a long, long time. Jim, our special guest tonight is Patrick Smith, and I'd like to, first of all, I got in touch with Patrick in the following way. I was reading Jacksonville's Florida Times-Union newspaper here a couple of Sundays ago, and the featured book was Cockpit Confidential, written by Patrick Smith. It was an interesting title, especially to another pilot. I decided to learn more about the book and Arthur by going to my internet browser, typing in Patrick's name. After reading the highlights of the book and background of Patrick Smith, I was convinced that Patrick would be a good interview on one of our future broadcasts. So I simply emailed the contact asking Patrick if he would be interested in coming on the show and telling us his story and more about the book that was featured in my hometown newspaper. He graciously accepted my invitation, and we are delighted to have him here with us tonight. By the way, before Patrick, I'm going to turn it over to you, and you tell us a little bit about yourself in the book, but his website is www.askthepilot.com. Very simple website, www.askthepilot.com. And on that website, you'll see that Patrick Smith is an airline pilot, an air travel columnist, and author. His Ask the Pilot column, from which portions of this website have been adapted, ran regularly on Salon.com from 2002 until 2012. Patrick has appeared on over 200 radio and television outlets, 201 tonight, Patrick, including PBS, Discovery Channel, CNN, the BBC, and National Public Radio. His work is regularly cited in print publications worldwide, from People, Time, and Men's Health magazines to the New York Times, Washington Post, USA Today, and Le Monde. A third-generation descendant of Neapolitan olive growers, he took his first flying lessons at age 14. His first job with an airline came in 1990 when he was hired as a co-pilot on a 15-passenger turboprop, earning a great amount of $850 a month. He's since flown cargo and passenger jets on both domestic and intercontinental routes. He authors self-published punk rock fanzines, and poetry journals of the 1980s and 1990s are considered among the more curious works of literature ever produced by a resident of Revere, Massachusetts. Patrick travels extensively in his spare time and has visited more than 70 countries. He lives near Boston. The thoughts and opinions herein are the author's own and do not necessarily reflect those of any other person, airline, or identity. Welcome, Patrick Smith.
And that $850 a month was gross, not just take home. Let's make that clear. And, you know, I feel bad for all the regional pilots out there. Things are better now than they were in 1990 as far as pay and working conditions for these guys, but not a whole lot better. I mean, starting salaries at the regionals are still usually in the low 20s, $20,000 a year. I mean, I don't know how these guys do it after investing tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars into their educations and their training, and then that's the payoff. It's you know, what made it different when I went through it is that you didn't expect to work at a regional carrier for very long. You put your time in, built up some experience, and then hopefully the major carriers were hiring, and you took the next step. But the regional airline sector today is so huge. It's more than 50% of all domestic flying. So these guys are figuring out, hey, you know, this job with this regional airline is very likely to be an entire career at that level. And so these guys, there aren't as many pilots out there getting into the business because they don't want to have to be stuck for an entire career making, you know, substandard wages and working in these confrontational environments at these carriers. And so the hiring pool is drying up, and I think in the coming years we're going to see a shortage, not at the major carrier level, but definitely at the regional airlines.
Patrick, do you consider Cape Air a regional?
Yeah, they're in a weird position, and that's a great question. They're somewhere between a regional and, I guess, what we used to call a commuter airline. Remember that expression that nobody uses?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe even air taxi is the better definition. I don't know, because they fly, you know, non-pressurized, piston-powered, single-pilot Cessna 402s. I mean, where does that fall in? But structurally, their operation is very similar to a regional. They have a published timetable. They have, I believe, co-share agreements with at least one major airline. That would be JetBlue, and kind of a partnership with them. So it's somewhere in between. They're a very unique and intriguing airline.
Do they have south partly in the fall or winter? Did they used to do that?
Yeah, they have a satellite operation that they run down in, I think it's in Puerto Rico. And they also, a lot of people don't know this, have a smaller satellite outfit that they operate out of Guam.
Oh.
Wow.
I think it's just one or two planes.
Yeah, Patrick, I'd like to find out a little bit about your book and how you came to write about Cockpit Confidential. And can you share why that title and how you came about writing it?
Well, let's back up. I started writing shortly after 9/11, a series of articles for the website Salon, which became a weekly column and then more than a weekly column, and then there was actually a first book that came out back in 2004, and now the second book, which it's called Cockpit Confidential, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel. For those of you who want to Google it and start ordering your copies, it came out this past summer. You know, I wrote it for a few different reasons. First and foremost, I guess, to inform. It's written for the frequent flyer, the nervous flyer, people who fly a lot but don't necessarily know a whole lot about the operation and are curious. You know, I start with the premise, I say to people, everything that you think you know about flying is wrong. And that's a bit of an exaggeration, obviously. It's a little tongue-in-cheek, but there's an important element of truth to that because, as you guys know, there's so much bad information out there when it comes to flying. Yeah. There are so many urban myths and misconceptions, and people just don't know where to go for the right answers. And so that's kind of the crux of the book is getting good information out there where there hasn't been any prior. Also, though, the book has another aspect to it. It's not strictly questions and answers. It's got a lot of sidebars that are more personal. The subtitle of the book is Questions, Answers, and Reflections, and the reflections consist of essays and memoir that kind of runs through the book, kind of experiences from my past and just timeouts where I talk about things like airport security and airline culture and airline identity. One of my favorite parts of the book is an essay where I compare the aesthetic merits of the 747 to the Airbus A380 and that sort of thing. So there's a kind of an entertaining, I hope, aspect that threads through the book. Parts of it, I think, are funny. There's a glossary. I call it How to Speak Airline, which is it's a serious glossary, but it's also quite funny, and I pick apart some of the goofier terms that airline people like to use. It's kind of part of our secret language exposed for everybody to understand. Also, kind of underpinning the whole book is this idea that that people should, crazy as this sounds in this day and age, maybe learn to reappreciate the experience of air travel a little more. I think we've come to a point where we take it for granted. People don't realize that flying is so much cheaper than it used to be, so much safer. And to put these things together, there's kind of a romantic view that I like to take. And for example, the fact that a person today can get on a 747 in New York and fly to China nonstop, halfway around the world, in reasonable comfort and almost perfect safety for what works out to a few pennies per mile. I mean, that to me is just absolutely astonishing, and nobody ever stops to think about it.
Yeah.
And so I try to remind people of that, that there's a certain, I don't know, glamour probably isn't the right word, but there's a certain excitement still in air travel that's lost on a lot of people. You might not experience it flying from St. Louis to Baltimore in a 737, but it is still there in the world of intercontinental travel, at least.
Well, Patrick, I know a lot of the information you have in your book must have come from your website, askthepilot.com, and I kind of went to that website and kind of explored it, and you must get a lot of your information, your material, from that website. And folks, once again, I suggest you go to www.askthepilot.com. By the way, Patrick, I ordered my book today from
Amazon.com.
And I hope all of our listeners around the world, we're in over 40 countries, Patrick, so hopefully they'll be calling or going to Amazon.com and ordering their book as well.
Yeah, the book is available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble. It's readily available in – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is it on the book stand at Barnes & Noble also?
Yes, it is.
Okay, very good, very good.
And it's pretty widely available in Australia, the U.K., Canada, of course, I believe Singapore, certain other countries, and if as last resort, if you can't track it down in your country, if you go to the website, there are ordering instructions on the merchandise page where you can place a foreign order, and I will mail you an autographed copy right from my
house. Very good. All right. Host, now I know you've got some questions out there, Steve and Chuck and Jim and George and who wants to start asking the questions? And now, be kind to Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick.
This is Chuck. I'm the mechanic portion here, and what I want to know is how much of your book is realistic? I mean, to the average flying a person. I mean, are they going to understand what you're trying to get across to them?
I'm not sure quite what you mean by realistic. Again, the target audience for the book, more so than people with a predisposed interest to aviation, is more more for the frequent flyer, for the nervous flyer, for people who, like I was saying a minute ago, fly a lot but don't necessarily know a lot about the experience. The title, though, maybe is a little misleading, Cockpit Confidential, because that makes it sound scandalous, and it's not. I'm not out there to put dirty laundry out there about, you know, scary information. It's not insidery in the way that it might suggest. Because, frankly, there's just so much of that already out there, and I think that really does a disservice to air travel because while there is a lot of stuff that people don't know, it's not necessarily scary stuff. I mean, most of the answers are interesting, but it's just, you know, pleasantly informational and not something that needs to be out there to terrify people and make them worry. I mean, flying is astonishingly safe now. And you know, I emphasize that rather than emphasize what might in some areas, you know, still need some work.
Thank you.
Patrick, this is Steve Thompson.
Hey, Steve.
I think you've kind of alluded to it, but is there a message in your novel that you want the readers to grasp?
Well, my closest answer to the closest way I can answer that is to more or less repeat what I said just a short time ago, is that I'm trying to remind people that air travel is still cool in a lot of ways. It's not simply a hassle. I mean, people have such contempt nowadays for airlines and for the experience of flying. And I think that comes from the fact that we've developed, I hate to say it, a sense of entitlement. And we take things for granted. We're spoiled when it comes to flying because it's cheap to do. It's very safe. We take it for granted. People don't realize it wasn't all that terribly long ago that only a small segment of the population could afford to fly at all. And now almost everybody can afford to fly. And
Patrick, this is Neil. And I remember years ago, and I believe it was with our own airline, Eastern Airlines, that we put out a little book, or perhaps it was on another airline that I might have been pass riding on. But it was the noises in flight,
mm-hmm.
The noises passengers hear in flight. And they explained
right.
All the noises from the very startup of the engines to the, you know, retraction of mm-hmm. the landing gear on takeoff and then the flaps extending on landing and then the landing gear coming back down for the landing.
And what a great idea that is. I mean, what a simple, useful idea. You know, imagine having that in the seat pocket and people who are sitting there during flight can kind of follow along. I mean, wouldn't you rather do that than thumb through SkyMall?
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, I can see people actually, if they read a book like that, to try to follow along the sequences of those noises.
And actually, my book has I don't do a noise Q&A directly, but all of the noises are explained in the various chapters as you go along. And there actually is a chronology to the book. It's not explicit, but if you look at it, it's there where we follow the arc of a flight from takeoff to cruise to landing. And then there's a section on just about specifically takeoffs and landings, one about the experience. It's called Life in the Cabin. I believe it's the fifth chapter where I talk about just the experiences, you know, in the cabin while the plane is aloft, you know, why things happen, what noises mean, what certain announcements mean. And then later in the book, it gets into more into airline culture specifically. The last chapter is it's called The Airlines We Love to Hate, and it's about fares and about airline service and how and why service standards on U.S. carriers, for example, has fallen so far behind the rest of the world.
Well, George Jen is with us tonight, and he's one of our regular hosts. And George, being another fellow author of a book, yours was an aviation mystery novel. Do you have any questions of Patrick?
Well, I find the choice, a couple of things that I found to be pretty interesting in some of your comments, Patrick, were particularly about the cost of air flying today, or, you know, of airfares today versus what they used to be. I gather from what I've read and the timeline on your work that you're quite a bit younger than most of us who are on the show here today who lived through change from regulation to deregulation. And I was just wondering if you had any particular thoughts on deregulation, because, you know, having been a former union representative at Eastern, I know the pain and suffering that in particular the pilots went through on it to get what are, you know, somewhat lower fares today. And while we're on that subject, one thing I've always believed in is, you know, you get what you pay for. So, in other words, if you'd like to buy a Chevy, you pay for a Chevy. You want a Cadillac, you pay the price for a Cadillac. So I was just curious to know about your feelings on deregulation, number one, what it did to the ranks of the airline pilot, and also if you feel that in any way it could be contributing to a less safe environment. I know you precipitated your remarks with the fact that flying is safe today, which fortunately it is, but you know, how long it'll be that way, I just like to get your thoughts on that.
And just to be clear, as far as my background, it's true I started flying commercially in 1990, which, as these things go, wasn't all that long ago. For what it's worth, I did grow up in an airline family. My mom was a flight attendant before I was born, and later worked ticket agent, cargo sales, city ticket office, and so forth for a number of years. So I have an airline family background, and I do remember, even though it was in childhood, deregulation and the fallout from it. I think it's pretty obvious that the result of deregulation was both good and bad for everybody involved. It created a lot more competition, more carriers, fantastic opportunities for people to travel, and the affordability of flying changed so drastically. The downside, you know, also kind of goes without saying. Legacy airlines that disappeared, and the thousands of people who lost their jobs from that. Was it better before deregulation? I don't know. And is the story finished? I don't know. People sometimes talk about the possibility of re-regulating the industry to some extent. Could that happen? Maybe. It's not going to happen in the near future, not unless, you know, there's some very drastic event that just causes some sort of massive upheaval in the industry. We saw something like that around the fallout from 9/11, you know, but even that wasn't enough, so I don't really see that coming. Re-regulation. The safety question you just asked is a good one. I'm not worried. I know that there's a lot of talk sometimes about all the small carriers that were generated by deregulation and how they seem to come and go nowadays. All these second and third tier airlines that are out there, are they as safe as the major carriers? Probably not. But even that I'll leave open. But at the same time, not as safe and unsafe are extremely different things. It's really an academic discussion and a kind of statistical hair split where you're pitting, just to pick an airline off the table, AirTran or Allegiant Air, versus United, Delta, American. Maybe there are differences in there somewhere, but from the consumer's point of view, are they meaningful differences? Probably not. I think the record really is ample enough to back that up. I mean, worldwide, not just domestically, flying has never been as safe as it is right now. And there was a point several years ago where the prognosticators were saying, if we don't watch this, we're going to reach a point where there were some estimates that there were going to be major crashes, at least somewhere around the world, on an average of once a week. That's what people were saying was going to happen. And it didn't. And it didn't happen because of, well, three things, really. And I talk about this in the book. The first and foremost thing, of course, is better crew training. the advent of crew resource management and the way pilots are trained and pilot culture, not just here in the U.S., but globally. The second reason is improved technology in the cockpit and air traffic control, runway infrastructure. We've really engineered out a lot of what used to be the most common causes of crashes. And we just don't see those massive disasters with, you know, 200, 300, 400, 500 people being killed the way we used to see them. Really, with pretty good frequency. I remember, go look at the accident record from the year 1985 sometime, and you'll just be astonished at how many huge, major airline catastrophes there were around the world that one year. And that was, you know, indicative of just how frequent crashes used to be from the 60s, 70s, 80s. That's really changed. And crew training, better technology, and then the third reason, which is something you don't hear a lot about, I would say is the collaborative efforts between carriers and regulators and groups like ALPA and other pilots unions all working together to bring us to the point where we are right now. And that's not to say we should rest on our laurels and just kind of let things play out, because you have to be preemptive and proactive with air safety or you risk the trend starting to move in the other direction. So far, it hasn't moved in the other direction, and I don't see that coming based on my observations of the global industry right now.
Patrick, if you had to do it all over again, would you change anything in this latest book?
In the book?
Yeah.
No, I'm actually very happy with the book. It was a surprisingly positive experience between working with me, working with the agent and with the publisher. There was a first book that came out back in 2004. It was called Ask the Pilot. It was named after the column I was writing at the time for Salon. And you can see it as a kind of a first edition almost of the existing book, but it wasn't nearly as comprehensive or nearly as well written or as good. But man, the experience I had with the publisher writing that book was so different from the one I had with the new publisher, which is a company out of Chicago called Sourcebooks. And they were so cooperative, so positive, so accommodating. I had input into the cover design and the back cover text and the page layout, the everything from the typeface to the little graphics they use inside. So I'm extremely happy with the book. It's everything the first book really should have been but wasn't. And,
oh, that's good. That's good to know.
Chuck again. I wanted to kind of change a little bit. Today, you see on a lot of the TV programs, Discovery and History Channel, about the new modern airports all over the world, you know, Dubai and some of the other ones that have really put a lot of money into them. What is your opinion as far as taking care of the flying public with these new airports?
Yeah, great question, great observation there. One of the things that worries me about air travel moving forward in this country is the state of our airports. It's really distressing when you go to Asia and Europe and you see these grand showcase airports. I think the governments elsewhere in the world realize what a driver of the economy air travel is, and they invest in their airlines and in their airports. And so we have airports like Dubai and Munich and Hong Kong, or the new airport in Bangkok, which is one of the most visually spectacular buildings, not just airport buildings, but buildings, period, I've ever seen. It's really impressive. And by comparison, we have, Miami International and LaGuardia. I mean, these are our showcase airports. I mean, that's just not right. And there's an essay in the book in Chapter 3. It's called What's the Matter with Airports, where I go through all the different dysfunctions, I guess, of the modern U.S. airport. and compare and contrast with overseas. I think my favorite airport anywhere in the world is probably Incheon Airport outside Seoul, Korea. It's not just architecturally impressive, but maybe the most passenger-friendly airport I've ever been to. Everything there is free. Free showers, free luggage storage, free internet, free massage. I'm not making that up. There are these little rooms you can go in and get a massage for free. There are city tours where if you have a long layover, they'll take you around Incheon or even into Seoul and bring you back, and it's free. There's a hotel inside the secure zone. You don't even have to go through immigration, and you can stay in this hotel, wake up, and walk downstairs and then onto your connecting flight. Things like that simply don't exist in this country because nobody wants to pay for it. And the result is an infrastructurally subpar air travel experience. And little things, too. One of my perpetual frustrations is just how incredibly loud our airports are. People are stressed out and hassled enough when they fly, and then we go and make it worse by amping up the volume in our terminals for absolutely no good reason. You've got those damn TV news monitors playing in every single gate, and you know they can't be turned off or turned down. It's like they're controlled by some Oz or Big Brother backstage. And then you've got layer upon layer of public address announcement playing simultaneously, sometimes two and three at a time. Babies crying, people on their phones. It's not until you get onto the airplane, curiously enough, that you can usually find some peace and quiet. And I hope that continues to be the case. And what I mean by that is I hope they don't eventually go and lift the cell phone restriction on airplanes, not for technological concerns, but for the mere fact that I don't want to be sitting on a plane with 200 people all having a cell phone conversation at the same time.
Donna, or any of our hosts, would you like to ask Patrick a question?
Patrick, Steve Thompson again. Was the writing of the book, did that come natural to you? Was it difficult to start with, or did other publications that you have written contribute to the ease of it? Was it a natural talent that you had?
That's a good question. Writing was something I always had a latent interest in, going all the way back to when I used to write music reviews and little travel logs and poetry journals that I would just write on my own and put together at the kitchen table and then give out to people. And eventually I did a few music reviews and magazine reviews for publications. This is in the 90s mostly. But even getting paid a little bit at a time for stuff like that, it wasn't anything that I really considered vocationally. It wasn't until after 9/11 and I was laid off. I was furloughed for 5.5 years from the airline I work for today, that I finally sat down and decided to see if I could make something out of these two passions, for lack of a better term. My love of airlines and the airline industry and my knowledge of airplanes combined with the hobby, which is really what it was at the time, of writing. And the online column grew out of that, and then the book grew out of that. So it is something that goes way, way back.
This is Jim, Patrick. You don't have a New England accent, but you live outside Boston. Where are you from?
I can do a New England or a Boston accent flawlessly, so don't challenge me. It's funny. My sister has the accent. My dad has the accent. My mother did not have the accent. I don't have the accent. It really depends not just where you grew up, but who your friends were and exactly which neighborhood you grew up in. I had the accent when I was younger. I went to a private high school north of the city where people just didn't talk that way and, started to get some strange looks whenever I opened my mouth. So at some point I coached myself to not to have the accent.
Jim, let's see. Patrick, I've got a question. You know, it must be, well, since you were a writer before you started columns, I guess, short stories, or you contributed to publications, is it very difficult to find a publisher for a book today?
It is, and a lot of people, because of that, are moving to the self-publication route. The problem with self-publishing a book is it doesn't have that cachet, I guess, and also you don't have the promotional and marketing muscle of a publisher behind you to get the book out there. When you work with a professional publisher, you have a publicist, you have marketing people all working with you to get your name and the book's name out there.
Jim, I agree with that. Or Neil, I'm sorry. I agree with that 100%. I found that out with my novel, that if you go with a smaller independent press, most of the marketing is left up to you.
Right.
They really don't want to be bothered with it. Why is beyond me, because, you know, for every dollar you make, they make money also. But for some reason, they're just, you really have to push them on it.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think Patrick and I discussed this, but one thing that I tried to do with my novel was to have the publisher approach Hudson News to get it put into the airports, because, as you know, Neil, you read it, it would be, you know, a natural on a bookshelf in an airport, and yet I got absolutely nowhere with that.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Even with a major publisher behind you, it's extraordinarily difficult to get your book into the airport. That your book happens to be about flying and is the perfect book for the airline traveler means nothing to them.
Why?
because airport books, the airport books retail, the whole market is really controlled by only a small handful of companies. Hudson Booksellers is one. There's another company called Parodies Incorporated. And they operate all of these franchise stores throughout airports, often under different names. So you don't necessarily know who the owner is just by looking at the sign that's hanging outside. It's almost always Hudson or Parodies. And they have their short list of books that are to be sold at the airport. And it's a bit of a catch-22. To be on that list, your book has to be a bestseller, but how can it be a bestseller if it's not on the list? And, you know, I went through this with the first book I wrote, where it was the absolutely perfect book for the airport, and everybody who saw it said, wow, you're going to sell a million of these at the airport, and it was never sold, really, at the airport, because... It wasn't on the list for Parodies or whoever, and they simply were not interested in hearing about why, you know, tactically, strategically, you know, this would be such a great product for the airport. It doesn't matter to them. It's a terrible business model for obvious reasons, because they could probably sell a zillion of them because that's the ideal selling point. But what happens instead is publishers pay to have their books promoted at the airport. So it's, you walk into what looks like an independent kind of bookstore in the terminal, and you see all these books up on display. The publisher is paying for all of those books to be up on display. And by the way, that includes my book, which starting November 1st is going to be promoted at Hudson Books for the next year or so. And I do have to say that Hudson this time around has been very accommodating. They had my book in their bestseller racks all throughout the summer at most airports, and now they're working with the publisher for the new promotion. Parodies, on the other hand, wouldn't return my phone calls, emails. We sent them copies of the book. No response whatsoever for what should be an easy airport bestseller. Not just my book, but lots of other books that are written with the air traveler in mind. But they don't care.
Yeah.
This is Chuck. What do those publishers for that's going to stick your book or somebody else's book on the stand? I mean, what do you have to qualify to get your book on the stand?
I'm not really sure how the publishers decide which books they're going to promote at airports. You know, part of it is whether the book is already a bestseller or is projected to be a bestseller to begin with. In other words, are you Malcolm Gladwell, for example, where you're already a famous author, and then obviously your book is going to be at the airport. Just because it you know, you're a household name, and people are going to recognize you. A book like mine is you know, I'm not a famous author. So there's one strike against me. I have this book that's perfect for people at the airport. That doesn't matter. Two strikes. It's very frustrating.
Patrick, have you had any showing, or either have you? Let's see. How do I say that? Have you had any book signings? Have you gone to Barnes & Noble and had book signings and that type of thing?
I've offered to do them. So far, nobody's really shown any interest. Hudson Books said they'd be willing to organize some signings at terminals around the U.S., but they also pointed out that book signings at airports tend to go very poorly because people are moving and usually in a rush and don't have time to stop and browse through a book and talk to the author and then maybe buy a copy.
Well,
media pickup hasn't been too bad. The book has been reviewed in the Wall Street Journal, and the New York Times did a little Q&A with me, the Boston Globe. It's been excerpted in, well, dozens of smaller papers.
Like the Florida Times Union, where I read it a couple of Sundays ago.
You know, you mentioned that to me, and I wasn't familiar with that particular review. If you could send me a copy, I'd love to see it.
I'll see if I can find it.
I would make a suggestion to you, Patrick. My book was reviewed in Airline Pilot magazine, and I got a tremendous response from it. It was a great review, and you might want to give Carrie Cantrell a call there at Airline Pilot Alpha magazine.
I get the magazine every month, and I've actually had more than my share of letters to the editor published in Airline Pilot magazine. I think I've had 7 or 8 of them in there. That's one way I've honed my skills, I guess. One problem there is I have to keep my employer out of this. I never talk about who I work for. I never use their name, never speak on the airline's behalf. To have a review in the magazine, I might have to come out with that, because they usually don't let people publish anything kind of without that affiliation being listed. And you know, that's too bad, I think, because most of what I write about is very pro-flying. And, you know, I probably go to bat and stick up for the airlines a lot more than I agree with, you know, people's general sense of contempt for carriers. I think airlines get a bum rap. I mean, flying's cheap, flying is safe, it's mostly reliable, and it's not all that uncomfortable, despite what a lot of people seem to think. You know, to that point, I was on this plane. I'm in economy class. This is fairly recently. I'm sitting there, and I've got about as much personal space as you would have had on a plane 30 years ago. Yeah, maybe a half inch less of pitch, of legroom. I had an ergonomically designed seat. I had seat back video on the screen in front of me, on the seat back in front of me, with literally hundreds of different movies and TV shows that I could pick from. There was a little USB connection where I could plug my gadget in. There was onboard Wi-Fi. I mean, these are things that didn't exist 10 or 15 years ago. Remember when they used to show movies on the bulkhead screen? And it was all wobbly blurry, and almost always it wasn't anything you wanted to watch in the first place, but there wasn't anything else.
Smokey and
then
the
Bandit. Smokey and the Bandit. And you had the plastic headset that would dig into your ear that had little jagged edges around the ear cup.
Yeah.
It was just, it was horrible. And, you know, look what we've got today. And instead of stepping back and realizing that that's pretty cool, you know, all people do is complain.
Patrick, this is Chuck again. I saw on television where they awarded, I believe, South Korea, the airline, the award for the most customer-orientated aircraft and service. Did you read anything about that?
No, not specifically, but that doesn't surprise me. I think Korean Air has maybe the best economy class I've ever been on. But most of the foreign carriers tend to be very good. Experiences can really vary flight to flight, crew to crew, so I don't like to say, well, they're the best. Who is the best? I don't know, but there's a small list of elite carriers, I guess, your Singapore's and Cathay Pacific's and Emirates and Korean maybe, the usual suspects.
Patrick, I'm sure you probably are not aware, unless you've listened to our radio show in the past, but there's a good possibility that Eastern Airlines will be in the air, we hope, sometimes next year. And from what the chief executive officer of the new Eastern Airlines told us on a recent broadcast of our show, that they have the necessary support in the investment area, and they have their team assembled in Miami, and they're working on the certification of the airline. So had you heard any news on that front?
A little bit. I know what you're talking about, and it's a nice idea. I'm not sure how... Well, it would be a difficult go, put it that way. I mean, especially with JetBlue out there really just owning the East Coast leisure market all throughout Florida and the Caribbean now. These are markets that were once dominated by Delta and Eastern, and even American to some extent, you know, now being taken over by low-cost carriers, and namely JetBlue. How to go head-to-head with them and also head-to-head with the major carriers at the same time. Is the market big enough for another Eastern? I don't know.
Well, the Eastern Airlines that we have been told is going to operate not domestically, but we're going to operate the new Eastern Airlines is going to operate from Miami to South and Central America and the Caribbean, where we were the number one carrier for so many years. That we operate in that area, so that's the that's their business plan, and I think they'll be successful once they start up because of the Eastern name, especially in Central America.
Sure, yeah. The recognition is still there, and I just hope that if they do come back, they go with the same paint scheme, the same old. Livery and logo that Eastern used, the two blue stripes and the little abstract falcon design. That was a beauty. It really was.
Yeah.
And, there's an essay in the book where I compare and contrast the different paint schemes of airlines nowadays and lament how the old-style body stripe that Eastern was so famous for is really gone now from airline design. Instead, we have these meaningless, generic, swooshy things that just kind of all look the same.
I
really missed those two diagonal lines going up the tail. It was so incredibly distinctive, and that's what airline identity lacks nowadays is distinction. All airlines just kind of look the same, and people don't they look at a tail and they just don't know what carrier it is, and that didn't used to be the case.
Okay, folks, host, do you have any other questions for Patrick tonight?
None from Jim.
I would just like to wish you a lot of luck with your book. I think it's going to be appealing to a very large segment of the population.
Well, thank you. I hope it. I hope I can get it out there so more people who I know would enjoy it will actually see it.
And this Patrick, just want to thank you for your participation with us tonight. It's been most enlightening.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Patrick, I'd like to make you an honorary member of our Eastern Airlines radio show tonight, and we'll have your book and the highlights of your book featured on our website, and we hope that you'll every once in a while come to our website, and you can go to www.EALRadioShow, and just type in your name, and you can register there and see what we offer on that website. But we will be suggesting that all of our members, 750 members now, and all of the listeners that we have, oh, we're averaging anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 listeners around the world, 40 countries around the world, we'll put that up right on the website and suggest they contact. Now, who would they contact in order to purchase your book? What's the best way of ordering your book, Cockpit Confidential?
Well, just put the title into Amazon or BarnesandNoble.com, and it'll come right up. As a last resort, go to my website, click on the big picture of the book right on the front page, and you can be brought through to all kinds of other purchasing options as well.
Great. Great.
By the way, I'm looking at a souvenir Eastern Airlines timetable that I have here on my shelf. Remember when carriers used to publish the paper timetables?
Oh, yeah.
With the route map inside and
yep.
The whole thing. You don't see them anymore. Just a few foreign carriers still have them, but I've got an Eastern one here that's one of my favorite souvenirs.
That's great. Thank you so much, Patrick, for being with us tonight. We certainly appreciate your time. And thanks for writing the novel or the book that you've written. And we hope everyone will certainly consider going to Amazon.com and ordering your book.
Well, I hear the champagne music in the background. We hope you enjoyed tonight's show, and we look forward to being with you once again next week, same time, same station, on the radio voice of Eastern Airlines, when we bring you another exciting Eastern Airlines radio broadcast. We wish you a very successful week in whatever you undertake to do. Remember, keep the blue side up, have safe airspeed and plenty of altitude, and from all of us, good night, Eastern Goodbye. Family.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
Good night, everybody.